Welcome back to another episode of the Health Freedom for Humanity podcast. I first got to start by saying we are being censored like crazy. Of course, there's nothing new with Health Freedom for Humanity. So we were recently just deleted on Twitter. So now we have Twitter added to our list that includes YouTube, Linktree, Eventbrite, and Instagram 4 times. And then also on Facebook and Instagram, if you try to share our website, healthfreedomforhumanity.org, as a link in your bio, as a message on Facebook or Instagram, or in a post, it will not allow you to share it or post it because it is considered a harmful link by Instagram and Facebook. So we are being censored everywhere. So we rely on our community of followers, listeners, subscribers, and members in order to spread the word on our organization. And again, our mission is to educate, empower, and unite people from all walks of life for health freedom. And we define health freedom in 2 ways. We define it as not only the right to choose what is best for your own health without coercion or force, but also the right to know and access what produces and maintains mind, body, spirit wellness. And that recent definition was adopted to reflect our orientation towards solutions. Obviously, we still cover the harmful effects of all these things and the importance of informed consent and the right to choose or not choose any of these products or measures. But it's also important to extensively cover, and we do this quite a bit at our events, these solutions. And okay, we know the problems in the world, but what do we do about it? So that is the direction of Health Freedom for Humanity. That's the direction we're going. And of course, like I said, because of that, and because we are being, we're uniting people so successfully, we are being censored so heavily right now everywhere. So we rely on people like you. So please, share our website, share our episodes with people that you know, bring a friend to any of our events that we have. By the time that this episode airs, it'll probably be just before or just after the Big Idea, which is in Wichita, Kansas. But we have several other events popping up all the time. Our California chapter recently just held an event on a regenerative farm. Our Florida chapter held a women's empowerment event. I know some of our other chapters have been holding events. Our Kansas chapter and our Kansas City chapter have held an event recently. And we have, we're really doing our part to educate, empower, and unite people from all walks of life. And we really mean that. For anyone who's attended our events, they can attest to that, that there really is a representation across the spectrum of politics, of, age, of gender, of religion, of socioeconomic background. We really do unite people from all walks of life under one common purpose. And again, that is the Recommission Defense of Health Freedom. So this episode is really long, and I don't want to speak too much on the intro because the episode itself is long. I had to share that though. But this episode we have on Dr. Sam Sigaloff, and he is a physician in the Army. And what he shares in terms of the patents he came across at the very beginning of the rollout of this mRNA vaccine or gene therapy, whatever you want to call it, that's what set him off to understand the harmful effects of these products and the potential harms that have really come to fruition. We cover that later in the episode too, diving into the DMED data and how the Department of Defense has tried to say that was because of a glitch. And it's very clear, and we discussed this, that it was not because of a glitch. These are actual signals that are popping up and indicating massive harm as a result of these shots. And it's really, really, really disturbing. But Dr. Sam's story is really, really compelling and really important for people to hear, whether you're a civilian or you're a member of the Department of Defense. And he is such a brave person in speaking up. Brave in the sense that he's a physician speaking up first off, but not only a physician, but a member of the Department of Defense and speaking up, and very courageous to do that, to share his authentic perceptions of these products and what's going on. So I appreciate him for his bravery. I appreciate him for coming on. And again, if you found this episode to be helpful to you, please share this with someone that you know, so that we can continue to educate, empower, and unite people from all walks of life for health freedom. Thank you guys so much for listening, and let's go ahead and get into the episode. All All right, so I have Danny from Terminal CWO. Had him on for another episode, the one that we recorded with Pam Long and Joe from Military Freedom Keepers. If you haven't heard that episode, highly recommend listening to it, especially if you're someone who's in the military or you know someone who's in the military and you're needing more clarity on what your rights are, especially as it pertains to this mandated shot and the difference between community, Pfizer, BioNTech, and all the things, medical exemptions, religious accommodations. We go really deep in that episode. And Danny provided so much great info in that episode. So when I connected with Sam and decided I wanted to interview Sam, I was like, Danny's got to be on this one too. So Danny's going to kind of, I won't say co-host, but you are kind of co-hosting in a way in that this is going to be a discussion. And it's going to be tailored towards discussing what Sam has found and how he's come into this space and what his background is and all the things. And I think Danny will probably jump in a few times to ask some other questions and then also provide some more context and go deeper on some of the topics because he's super knowledgeable. So thank you for joining, Danny, and then Sam. So I want to start this with asking how you even ventured into this space, because it's rare that someone in the military comes across the inconsistencies and inaccuracies and all the things behind the pharmaceutical industry and what have you. And I, you know, I want to be careful with wording here and not to speak for you, but how have you come to understand the harmful nature of these particular shots and everything else that goes into that?
Well, first, I want to thank you for having me on, and I want to let you know that I am currently off duty. I'm not in uniform, as you can see. Any view that I give is solely my own, and it does not represent the DOD, Department of the Army, or the U.S. government in any way at all. So when this first came out, I was in Alaska, and I had just I was the only doc who volunteered to go out into our COVID clinic. And to give you an idea of what it was like, it was March in Alaska, still below zero temperatures, so cold that thermometers don't work. And so you have to figure out a way to get them warm. And so that's kind of, for a month and a half, I was out in this tent and we didn't diagnose a single person with COVID. And I was very liberal with my testing, probably more than, you know, pushing the CDC limits, guidelines to the limit, like right on that line, maybe even as close to that line as
like
anyone
when you
push
say
without.
When you say liberal with the testing, you're like testing as many people as possible.
Anybody that would get the minimum criteria, and sometimes I'd, you know, be creative with some of them. It's like, well, you can't smell. Okay, well, let's go ahead and test it. And a month and a half of being out there, not a single positive test. And to give an idea, like we had rapid testing in-house because of
Was that pretty shocking, to see that? Especially if you're being really liberal with the testing and there's no positive test coming back. Were you using the RT-PCR? Is that what was being used?
I think it was BioFire.
Okay.
I think it was BioFire was the brand. Bio something.
But did it use PCR assays or did it use, got it.
It was a PCR, and that was back before I knew about the cycling and how they didn't do it the normal way. So I don't know how many cycles they did. But I also would do flu at the same time, which no one was doing at that time. At least, you know, they didn't recommend to do flu and strep, but we did get some flu, we did get some strep. So we treat them as well, because it's all about the patient, right? You got to help people. And then sometime in, was it January of 21, when they came out with Moderna and Pfizer ingredient list, there was some compounds in there that I'd never heard of before. And so I looked them up, and those compounds are called DSPC and DSPE. And those are lipid nanoparticles. And there is a patent, and I'll tell you the patent number. It's US patent 10.485.884. The title is Composition of Methods for Delivery of Agents to the Brain. And so DSPE and DSPC were specifically patented to deliver medications directly through the blood-brain barrier into the brain. And the significance of that is our body has a wall that keeps things out of the brain space. And so we call it a blood-brain barrier. There's a couple other places like a blood-retinal barrier, blood-testes barrier, to keep the immune system away from those areas.
And so when you came across this, like what was your reaction to seeing something like this? And were you skeptical of the shot, or was it just because you saw in the like ingredient list that there was, you know, additives and other things that weren't there in previous shots? Like, were you just wanting to research for the sake of researching? What was the intent behind it?
So it was an interesting point in my life as well. So it's when I started questioning everything that I've learned in medicine. And so these two things hit right at the right time. So about a month before COVID blew up big in the United States, I had started carnivore diet, and it was to treat some medical conditions that I have. I have a condition called idiopathic hypersomnolence, narcolepsy, basically the same thing. And now it doesn't cure it, but if I eat things that I shouldn't, if I eat carbs when I shouldn't, then my medications that I take to help keep me awake, they actually don't work. And so I'll get incredibly tired for periods of time. You know, it's not like the movie Deuce Bigelow where, you know, it's not like that. But it is like normal. And then like you've been up for 24 hours or 48 hours and then go back to normal. So it's it is controllable. It can be difficult at times. And so right around that time, I've read some books. One of the books was Lies My Doctor Told Me by Ken Berry, Dr. Ken Berry. And encourage every physician out there to read it and every person to read it, because there's many things that we think because we've been told them, but the evidence and the research isn't there.
Yeah. And I want to ask you, keep going. Sorry. I want to ask you along with that thought and keep going with that same train of thought. But my question is this: you as a physician, and I hit this same point, definitely not as a physician, but as just a thinking human being, where I was like, am I wrong? I'm looking at this stuff and I'm questioning myself. Like, I know who I am. I know how to read. I know how to put one and two together and get three. And I know how to connect the dots and stuff, but man, like, how am I going against this flood of people and information coming against me? Am I the one that's wrong? Did you go through that with a cognitive like bias?
I was blessed enough to where when I was in Alaska, there was a doctor who was, who was kind of the same mindset and was curious. And, you know, she wasn't on the meat thing, the meat train, as I like to say, as I was, but she was at least open to talk about it, right? And she was kind of skeptical of these shots as well. And we talked about some other things. But so getting back to the DSPC, DSPE thing, I looked them up, looked up the material safety data sheets on them. Because it's like, well, I don't know what this stuff is. Let me look it up. And it says not for human use, not for research in humans, not for medical use. And wow. Yeah. I mean, and so I'm like,
dude's on active duty?
No. She's been able to escape.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm glad she's been able to get out of this system since then. But yeah, so it says not for human use. And it's like, okay, well, let me look into these a little deeper. And that's when I discovered this patent. It says that they're made to take them to the brain. And so kind of the idea amongst us physicians was this would be like other immunizations where you get them in your arm and it stays in your arm and it causes a little inflammation there and it causes, you know, your immune system to react and really complex stuff. I'm just a family physician. But they put a compound in there to specifically take it to the brain, not to leave it in your arm. So that made me thinking like, well, why would they do that? Why do they need to use this compound that's never been used in humans? And also in that patent, they talk about problems that they had with it. Suppressing the immune system. They had other allergy issues with it.
And at what point had it been used prior to being used in conjunction with mRNA technology? At what point was this specific thing, the lipid nanoparticles, used in any other trials or anything like that?
That's a wonderful question. I wish I knew. That would be a better question for Dr. Robert Malone.
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
So,
you know,
okay.
At what point they said, okay, well, we can't. Now, one thing that Robert Malone did talk about, though, is he has talked about how they needed these to get these into the system so that it'll go into the cells. Hmm. And he's also said how originally mRNA was designed to rapidly break down. Hmm. So that if you give a dose and let's say you have a bad reaction to it, or there's a problem, or you don't want to continue dosing, nor if you put in RNA that looks like normal human DNA, looks like messenger RNA, mRNA or messenger RNA, then it breaks down pretty quickly. And so to continue that medication usage, you'd have to do a second dose. Now, the difference with this is they use the nomenclature mRNA, but if you look at the subtext, it's M, and then you look at the little asterisk next to it and go down to the subtext where it says, this represents modified mRNA.
Yeah. I'm glad you're saying this, because this is one of the biggest questions and the biggest learning points I had listening to that podcast you sent me the other day. Understanding that they've tricked us just with that simple acronym alone, mRNA, they're not talking about messenger. That blew my mind. I didn't know that. That was wild.
And since then, I've learned that it's not just modified, but I listened to Robert Malone talk, and it actually doesn't get broken down in your body in the same way. And they don't know how long it stays in you and how long it stays in the cytosol and continues to take over the ribosome and make protein that it's encoded for. And we've also learned that it will go into the nucleus where it shouldn't go. And because it's in there, it can change the DNA.
Yeah. So
that is extremely disturbing.
Yeah. And I was watching a video from, what's her name? Dr. Penny. You all familiar with
Dr.
her?
Dr. Sherry Tenpenny.
Yeah. Yeah. She was talking about this the other day, and really, really powerful, like a 3 or 4 minute clip that she did. But, she's of the mindset that this will likely never leave your system, and saying that the more you continue to put this vaccine in your body, the more times you get boosted, obviously the more you're decreasing your autoimmune, your body's natural ability to fight off stuff. But she is of the mindset that by the end of 2022, you know, all of these people who have been injecting the stuff, and she uses a pretty strong term. I don't know if she says all, but her metric of volume is pretty high, whatever it was, saying that most of these people are going to have vaccine related autoimmune deficiency, which is AIDS. And that is terrifying. We've been hearing about it. We've been seeing it. We've been seeing it play out with the, you know, in Australia where they removed the 50,000 vials of Moderna because people were getting false positives. Those aren't false positives, my dudes. Those are, you have AIDS. Congratulations. Join the society of 1980s. But that's what's mind-blowing to me.
What's that? Pause you there for a second, because I want to pause you there for a second, just because, so the idea of having AIDS is that idea, acquired autoimmune deficiency, that's a syndrome. And sure, previously, sure, yeah, that the most common cause of that syndrome was the HIV, you know, the virus. And so you can have autoimmune deficiency and not actually have the HIV.
Gotcha.
The human.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole in and of itself that we could get into in another time, on the so-called connection between HIV and AIDS and the real cause of AIDS. Life, but, right. but to your point, Danny, discussing the rise in, it's actually interesting because we had an episode that just aired yesterday, where I interviewed a nurse practitioner and two nurses in various hospital settings throughout the United States. And what they described seeing in terms of an uptick in, neurological issues, strokes, blood clots, heart issues, chronic inflammation and cancers, resurging in people is extremely disturbing. And it wasn't that they were already looking for these markers because of the shot. It's that they noticed it, a drastic difference after a large number of people had received the shots.
Actually, so, using the scientific method, right? Yeah,
exactly. And and that's what's so scary, is that the nurse practitioner who was talking said that the most shocking thing to her was that this was extremely alarming as she's watching this happen, and all of her colleagues had basically no intellectual curiosity whatsoever and were just like, oh, whatever, like did not really care to find the root problem of the rise in all of these things just after. And she looked at the charts of each of these people, all three of these women did, and of course they had received either one, two, or three doses of this product. So Sam, is that the same thing that you experienced prior to the rollout, but like you see this product coming on to the market that the Army is going to start using, right? And you were probably very alarmed. Did you approach any of your colleagues and other people in Army medicine to say, hey, there's some glaring issues here?
Okay, so when I first discovered some of these things, it was a touchy subject because there was already so much groupthink going on in the medical field. And so I shared some of these thoughts with that one doc that I mentioned earlier, internal medicine doc. And she thought it was pretty shocking. The nurse that I had that was working with me, she thought it was shocking too. And I started counseling patients on this. And short time later, I had a patient who used to like me, I guess, put on Facebook in this, you know, and then everyone else piled on top. Dr. Sigaloff used to be a great doctor, but then ever since COVID, he's lost his mind.
Wow. Was this a service member that was a patient, or was this like a DA civilian or something? Okay. Why?
Yeah, service member. So the position I was in a hospital clinic. And so I rarely would see service members. Any service members that I saw were mostly, employees of the hospital. So I saw mostly beneficiaries. That's, you know, wives, children, that kind of stuff.
Got it.
And I think the difference is this patient who wrote that on Facebook thought they knew my political stance and thought it was left-leaning, and then thought it was right-leaning afterwards because I said that we should be concerned with this and that we shouldn't just jump on.
Especially because the narrative was like being pushed in the media that only super far right-leaning QAnon supporting Trump supporters were ones questioning the shot.
So when I'm at the news station I am now, I actually had a nurse when I showed her this, the same doc, you know, series of documents. She said, "Where did you get this? Is this some sort of QAnon research that you're doing?"
Oh my God.
Wow.
Golly. No, this is the material safety data sheet that came from the company that manufactures this.
Labeled Pfizer, dum-dum. Yeah, wow.
It says the toxicology reports, many of the different listed of are all classified.
Wow.
You know, and their need to feel superior and to, push back against this stuff, they're literally infantile in their responses and lacking in any kind of research, any kind of, you didn't even take the time to open the front page and look at what the freaking acknowledgement from the author said. You just immediately jumped on this cognitive lockdown in your brain and dismissed it outright. And that to me is worse than any kind of QAnon or whatever garbage agenda is out there or thought process. That is the absolute worst in all of this. I'm talking about the people who push back against this and say that the vaccine is totally safe. They are the worst about pushing this stuff in this cognitive bias dimension.
And that's one thing that, like, you know, those QAnon people, sure, they might be great people. They might not be. I have no opinion on that because I have no knowledge of that.
Exactly.
And I don't want that ever to water down the subject of what I'm talking about trying to save humanity, because what I've seen looks bad. Now we've had a conversation before about how, you know, we don't want to tell everybody, well, you're screwed, sorry, because we don't know. The thing is, I don't know. I'm not telling you you're going to die. I'm not telling you you're going to live. I mean, you could get hit by a meteor tomorrow and it wouldn't have mattered. The thing is why put something in you that appears to be quite dangerous?
Right.
And why keep putting something in you that appears to be quite dangerous? That the toxicology reports are classified, and who has the authority to classify those after the FDA has approved it?
We're so easily steered by this stuff, and you know, the anti-vaxxer narrative has become the new racist. You know, before I could call you a racist, and you're immediately crying out, "No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I have black friends. I have Mexican friends." But now it's you're an anti-vaxxer. Well, no, I don't disagree with all vaccines. Stop. Just, they're steering you, man. They've got you by a hook in the nose, and they're just pulling on you all around the place. Just stop for a minute and let's have a discussion, but we can't do that.
Yep. Yeah, and it's so clever how they manipulate our minds to do that. To on one side of the spectrum, immediately dismiss anything if there's any indication of skepticism towards pharmaceutical products. And then what's really sad to me is the number of people that I've interviewed that have been injured by the shot, right? Or have had a loved one that was killed from the shot. And I've had several of these interviews that we've done as it was part of our podcast series, Voices of the Victims, is you ask them, oh, they're heartbreaking. They're heartbreaking. And you ask them, like, were you aware of VAERS and how it's severely underreported? Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare, the only independent review of VAERS, showed that less than 1% of adverse events are reported. Were you aware that Pfizer is not held liable because of the PrEP Act? Were you aware of the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act? Were you aware of the history of Pfizer's in terms of their criminal history? Were you aware of any of these things? And the answer for the predominant majority is no, they weren't aware of any of these things.
Of course not.
There's one more. Moderna has never brought anything to market ever. No. Wow. Until now.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's nothing on that line. There's nothing more devastating. And I could never condemn a parent for thinking they're doing the right thing and they get their kid vaccinated and then they see their kid die. And this has happened. I mean, this, the amount of kids who have, you know, I'm not even going to say that statement because I don't have quantifiables on it, but a lot of kids, anecdotally and in the news and everything else, have died from this. And a lot of student athletes.
Not a single one of them needed to, because the risk of dying from COVID is so infinitesimally low that it's not worth any risk to ever even think about, let alone actually do it, but even think about giving this to kids.
Right. And that in and of itself, right, I can't imagine the agony of being a parent and knowing that, like, how do you wrap your mind around the idea that you sealed the fate for your child? That's something I can't comprehend. I couldn't live with myself.
And one thing that really just makes me so angry is these kids are dying. These adults are dying. These, you know, people are having their life completely changed forever. Families changed forever because they listened to someone that they were supposed to be able to believe. Someone who was supposed to be able to read, use their actual brain and look at things and go,
Right. You don't think your government is 1944 Germany and yet. Right. Holy cow.
Well, and then that's the other thing is the physicians though, too, like specifically like family physicians and other people who are healthcare workers who are supposed to be the experts on a number of these topics who are not providing any informed consent whatsoever, not providing alternatives, not looking at the CDC data from an objective position. And I always share this, and it's that 95% of COVID-related deaths or deaths labeled with COVID had an average of 4 comorbidities. 78% of hospitalizations were in overweight or obese people. And the two largest risk factors for death, according to the CDC, are obesity and fear/anxiety-related disorders. Mm-hmm. And like that screams the importance of lifestyle, nutrition, and mindfulness. And there's zero talk of that from anyone in the medical community whatsoever.
When has Fauci ever said, eat meat?
Never. Ever.
Ever. Well, I tell people all the time, because there's an article that came out in October of 19, published in January of 20. And it's the dietary roles of taurine, creatinine, or hydroproline, can't remember exactly. But it says that as little as 30 grams of red meat a day can optimize the immune system to help you fight infections, including bacteria, fungus, viruses, and then in parentheses, including coronaviruses.
Mm. Wow. You know, we going back a minute to what we were talking about with Pfizer and how they've controlled this. I look at how they control things now versus what the atmosphere was like in the late 70s, early 80s. You can go back and you see these clips where Fauci himself is getting grilled by journalists, journalists who are actually doing their job, and they're coming out and they're gunning him and they're gunning other people in this conversation. Obviously it wasn't about coronavirus. It was related to AIDS, but they were talking about a lot of the things that he was doing, which were medically negligent at best. And they're doing their job as journalists. And I think at that point, the pharmaceutical industry realized that, hey, our biggest opponent right now is the media. We need to get this unlocked or we'll never be able to do this again. So what do? They lobbied Congress like crazy, and they own Congress now. They inserted all their folks into the media, and they spent billions and billions and billions of dollars over decades to shape and establish a platform for which they can do what they're doing now. And there is no resistance. Well, at least the resistance that is there, us, is infinitesimal in size to what is supporting them.
Just a quick statistic on that, then I want to get to Sam to talk more about like his path on, you know, from discovering that and then the exemptions that he was writing, which were legitimate, and the whole controversy surrounding that. But to your point, Danny, just for the people listening to this, so in, I memorized this in 2019, the industry that came in second for money spent on lobbying in government was the oil and gas industry, and that was $92 million, right? So that was second. Number one was the pharmaceutical industry at nearly three times that amount, $228 million spent lobbying. We hear people really on both sides and mostly coming from the left talking about how corrupt oil and gas is, and I don't want to say that that's not true. That's not the point of this. What I'm saying is that we talk about how corrupt oil and gas is and how much they're in bed with our government. They spent $92 million lobbying in 2019. The pharmaceutical industry spent nearly three times that amount, $228 million. And then we look at the media companies. This is an alarming stat. It used to be ABC was the exception to this, but now ABC does have someone on their board. Every single mainstream news organization shares at least one board member with at least one pharmaceutical company. So to put that into context, these people are going to board meetings at Pfizer, Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, Sanofi, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna. They're going to those board meetings, right? Sitting on the board of those companies. And then later in the day, later in the week, later in the month, they're going to board meetings at CNBC, CNN, CBS, Fox News, all these mainstream news organizations, and they're saying, hey, this is what I want to report on. This is what I want us to avoid reporting on. Clear conflicts of interest. And then when it comes to funding, BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street are predominant shareholders in all those pharmaceutical companies that I just listed. And they're also predominant shareholders in the companies, in the mainstream news companies that I just listed. And the last one is, every single one of those mainstream news organizations, not to discount news journals like Wall Street Journal, like the New York Times, like the Washington Post, they're receiving billions of dollars in funding from these same pharmaceutical companies and also from BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street. And then lastly, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, one of many foundations who is directly involved with funding the mainstream news organizations, the CDC Foundation receives a crap ton of funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Yeah. So the intertwining of all of those.
You never wanted to own anything and be happy, right?
Well, what you're saying is, to use one example, is CNN. Yeah. There is no reason in the world, there is no way that a free market would support the ability for CNN to continue to be on the air if it wasn't for the fact that they have funding coming in from other areas, because their viewership has plummeted so low, so just to the point that they're not even relevant in any way, yet we're still saying their name as if they're a relevant media organization. And it's because they're getting funding as if they haven't lost any viewership. And that, to me,
and that's to further to that point that you just made, that one doctor went on Joe Rogan's show to peddle his book. Because Joe Rogan has more viewers every day than
Sanjay Gupta, right?
I think it's Sanjay Gupta.
He didn't realize what he was doing. That's Joe Rogan, man. You're not going to win that fight. What an idiot. But anyways, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and I hope that Joe Rogan, he stays strong and continues to say the things that he says and isn't influenced, even though sometimes you have to say things out loud. But keep fighting the fight, man.
Keep sticking it to him. Exactly. So Sam, I want to get back to, okay, so you're... So you came across this information, you were alarmed, you were shocked, and you were already in a state of questioning. So you began, I don't want to speak for you, but I guess what happened next in terms of you as a physician that is working in the Army, what transpired next in terms of the rollout of the shot and then where your stance was?
So a lot of my colleagues who work for different hospitals, who are medical directors of different hospitals, they were making these propaganda videos of why I got the shot, you know, and I talked to my wife. I said, hey, I think I want to approach the public affairs officer at my hospital and say, hey, I want to make a video of why I didn't get the shot, why I did not get the shot. Because I think that's important for patients to not only know that it's okay to not get it, but understand there's legitimate reasons why not to get it. And then my wife, she is very, very wise. She said, don't do that, because then you will be taken out of clinic and you'll never talk to a patient again. And now let's fast forward to a couple months, and I'm sitting there with that doc I discussed earlier, and another doc, and another internal medicine doc, and he said, you know, we were talking about society and how, you know, we're not Venezuela yet. And he said, no, but we are Venezuela. And the reason we are Venezuela is because you won't make that video of why you didn't get the shot. We are in Venezuela right now.
Wow. Good point.
You know, I won't mention this person's name. This is a colleague of yours, Sam, and you'll know who I'm talking about when I say this. But this person is a senior ranking physician in the military, has been very, very vocal in this fight. And this person is basically babysat at their clinic when they work by another person of the same rank, which is higher than Sam's rank. Sam is a major, so use your imagination. But anyways, this person is babysat by another person of the same rank to ensure that they don't say something that is anti-COVID vaccine at any point. And they are that to me is mind blowing. That you have dedicated a field grade officer to sitting there watching over and ensuring that the wrong thing is not said.
Yeah, field grade officer and a physician. Like that is absurd to me. And it's absurd even like on a deeper aspect that, so we have people, like there's a large number of people, a large number of physicians who are experts in their respective fields, right? That have come to a conclusion that is different than the so-called majority that is very much so propped up. And I'll get to that. And they are not allowed to express their opinion, their medical opinion, after sorting through the data for themselves, given all the context of their training, given the context of their schooling. They're not allowed to express their opinion at all if it is different than the majority. And then within that, the majority is fully propped up because there are so many people. I mean, I bet you've experienced it too. I've had so many people contact me in our organization, even doctors that are within our organization that are too scared to say certain things, although they hold that opinion, because they know that if they do, they'll be threatened, they'll be ostracized, they'll be mocked, they'll be shamed, they'll be drugged through the mud, even sometimes in the mainstream media. And in many cases, they will have their license under investigation or their license pulled from them and not be able to practice medicine anymore, which then goes into their livelihood and their ability to provide for their family. So this idea, which is a logical fallacy in and of itself, of overwhelming majority of experts agree, the idea that that takes the place of evidence is ridiculous regardless. But
there is an overwhelming majority of experts, because any other experts are silent, suppressed, having their license investigated.
Exactly.
Under investigation with my
license.
Was
that one? Oh yeah, I was going to say there was that one doctor up in Maine who had her license taken away by the state, and then she was ordered into psychiatric evaluation in order to get her medical license back. That was the requirement for her to get this back. And you know why? One reason: she prescribed ivermectin to her patient. I kid you not, for COVID, for the specific reason of COVID, and had her license revoked and was ordered into psychiatric therapy for her license back. Also, let me add an anecdotal story to this. So I got COVID a few months ago. Second time I've had it. And I was looking everywhere, because at this time I had been talking to Dr. Vliet, with Truth for Health Foundation, and learning a bunch of stuff, talking to other doctors out there about all this stuff. Okay, so I won't bore you with that. Anyways, the point is, I was looking everywhere for, name it, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, along with other stuff. But these are not the two things you get that are the cure-all, end-all, be-all of COVID treatment. Either way, my wife did a lot of research, found this doctor 3 hours away who owned a private practice. And with his private practice, you could probably help me out with this, either one of you, with they make their own drugs on the spot. What do you call that? It's the pharmacy that's
compound pharmacy.
Yeah. Okay. So they had a compound pharmacy where they make this stuff on site. And he told me he can get away with doing this because he is not bound to a specific clinic under a hierarchy or anything else. But he was going off on the phone about how insane this was, and he doesn't know me from anybody. First of all, he asked me, he's like, how'd you hear about me? He was speculative at first and asking questions. But now I will add that he did say, you know, he was not against the vaccine. He was saying, okay, you've been vaccinated. Now let me explain the blah, blah, blah. He was in favor of the vaccines, but that's not the point of this. The point is he was saying, look, the science is clear. Hydroxychloroquine, it's blah, blah, blah. He went into all this stuff about the anti-inflammatory and this and that. And he prescribed, he told me, I think zinc and a bunch of other stuff, Advair, a whole bunch of other things he gave me. But his point was, he said, people are coming to me from all over the state looking for treatment on this stuff. And he said, it's insane to me. And my wife had to drive 3 hours there and 3 hours back to retrieve medicine that we could have easily gotten here in town. But unless it was for a parasite, they would not prescribe it because it's been banned. You are not allowed to. Guess what? 24 hours. My symptoms turned around within 24 hours as soon as I started taking the medication they gave me. We know this. We see this. But you are clinically insane, hence the physician up in Maine. You must go to psychiatric therapy to get your license back if you prescribe this stuff, which is scientifically proven to be effective in COVID treatment.
And I have an anecdote along those same lines. I had this patient that was ill with COVID. I talked to him on the phone, and he was able to get about two or three words out before he had to gasp for air. And they keep talking about two or three more words and gasp for air. And this is shortly after Peter McCullough's article about hydroxychloroquine came out. And so I wrote him a hand script. His wife came by, picked it up. TRICARE doesn't pay for it, which is fine. He understood that. He understood he'd have to pay cash. And so he went to this one pharmacy, and then I called him the next day to find out, hey, how you doing? He said, well, I couldn't get the medicine. Interesting. Okay, so let me call the pharmacy. Called the pharmacy. It was a different pharmacist on that day. And she said, well, what's the hydroxychloroquine for? I said, that's none of your business.
Right, none of your business.
That's you as a physician prescribing it, right? Like it's not relevant to the pharmacy.
I'm a board-certified family physician and had been in practice for 8.5 years at that point. And the pharmacist, you know, they've saved my bacon before, and I'm very appreciative. But that's for dosing errors, giving too much, giving too little. Not telling me, well, that's an inappropriate medication for that.
Keep going.
And sorry. This female pharmacist, she started getting a little heated. And I said, what right do you have to withhold care to my patient? And then she got really angry. And I said, what evidence do you have? I have this article right here. What evidence do you have to show that I can't use it? And she slammed the phone down on me.
Right.
And that's what I'm talking convention. About is the inability of physicians to actually do their job and practice medicine. And like now they're governed by protocols that the hospital or someone higher than the hospital is setting. And in your case, it's not necessarily the hospital. It's got to be a higher echelon to that, that they are setting. These are the parameters that you must follow. Then what's the point of even having a physician? Like, what's the point of seeing a physician anymore?
And there are certain medications. So I kind of understand her position, not being comfortable maybe to prescribe something, because there are certain medications that I don't give.
Mm-hmm.
Like estrogen only, I will not prescribe estrogen only birth control.
But that's your job as a physician though, right? Like, and that's on you.
I can't give you that to the patient. I say, I can't give you that, but let me make sure you leave here today with an appointment with someone who can give it to you. I don't get angry and walk out and slam the door.
Yeah. And so within the context of practicing medicine, again, you started recommending against this shot, right? Like you started recommending against it for
no, I didn't even recommend against it.
Oh, wow. Okay. So how did you approach
the truth?
Got it.
Yeah. So first I'd say, you know, I would tell pregnant women, I don't think any pregnant woman should ever get this because we don't know enough about it. And my example I'd give was DES was a medication they used to give pregnant women back in the 70s. And when those children inside of them were exposed to DES, they had a 40-fold increase of renal adenocarcinoma or kidney cancer when they were in their 20s to 30s. Wow. So it took 20 to 30 years to figure out that they had a 40-fold increase in renal cell adenocarcinoma.
The implications of that with what we're dealing with this are extremely concerning.
No pregnant woman should ever get it. But then when I was in Alaska, one of the pediatricians who was pregnant got it. And no breastfeeding woman should get this because we don't know anything about it. We don't know how it transfers. We don't know if it does or doesn't transfer. And you've got Fauci on TV saying, oh, we'll get it, and then you'll be able to transfer antibodies to your child as you breastfeed. That's a bunch of manure. Sorry.
I think about...
Because
I think about the fact that my daughter... Go ahead.
The only antibodies that the children get are in the first 3 days when it's colostrum. After that, the milk doesn't have the antibodies in it.
I think we have a slight delay. I apologize, Sam. I just want to say I have an infant daughter, and I think she might not be here. When I say infant, very, very young. And at the time, we asked the doctor, we were in the parking lot, actually, asked the doctor, do you recommend the vaccine for my wife? At this time, I had not started doing all the stuff I'm doing now. But she looked at us and said, she put her head down. I remember her exact expression, because I've talked to my wife about this several times. She put her head down, and you could tell she was deliberating, and she looked and she said, listen, I can't recommend that you get it or don't get it. What I can say to you is that we don't know enough at the moment, and I think you need to do your own research and make as best a decision as you can for your family. And that was her way of saying, don't get the shot. That's what it said to me. And so when I started looking into it, digging into it more, I think about the amount of abortions, spontaneous abortions, miscarriages. Yeah. That have skyrocketed because of this vaccine. I said, my daughter might not be here.
82%, 87% in some cases.
Yeah. And well, that's what I want to definitely want to get into next, like as we like transition this phase, because I know that you were giving medical exemptions when you deemed that they were necessary, correct? Or correct me if I'm wrong on that. And then someone.
That's absolutely correct. And I only gave them to service members because service members were the only ones who were required to get them, required.
Yeah.
That's air quotes. Because they can't mandate something. It's an illegal order to mandate something that's not FDA approved. And there is no FDA approved product available anywhere.
Yep. Yeah. And we discussed that part extensively in our last episode, the difference between community and Pfizer BioNTech. So if you're listening to or watching this and you're not familiar with that, because it also applies to the civilian world. It's like that episode is important to listen to for service members for sure, as is this one. But it's also important to listen to, period, because there are a lot of jobs that are mandating it and saying, oh, there's a federally approved Pfizer vaccine, you need to go get it. There is no federally approved Pfizer vaccine available to actually receive. It is Pfizer BioNTech that is available, and that is still under EUA. And this clever bait and switch, I just talked about this recently on a Twitter thread that I made. This was done so that they are still able to remain indemnified from liability, because as soon as they start offering the community product and it's not yet on the childhood schedule, which is the only way that it could be covered under the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which would indemnify them from liability in another way, that is the only way that they will offer the community product, is if it is on the childhood schedule. And it's not on the childhood schedule yet, which is why they're really trying to push for that. And because it's not, if they were to offer the community product, which is FDA approved, then they would not be indemnified from liability and people could start suing them for injury or death. So the reason that they've pulled this clever bait and switch, approving the community product but not offering it, and then saying, oh, it's nearly identical to, if not the same as the Pfizer BioNTech, is because Pfizer BioNTech is still under EUA. So then they're able to push that, but say, oh, there is another product we have that's identical. And and Sam, you actually brought up a good point on a phone call I had with you of how they use, it might've been you, Danny, on how they use interchangeable versus can be used interchangeably.
Yeah, I had talked about it.
Yeah,
you can go ahead, Sam.
This sounds like we're splitting hairs, like legal hairs here. But if you read, like, I don't know if any of the listeners here have access to the order that the Secretary of Defense put out.
I can share it. I can share it in the show notes.
I will give you an article. Actually, I have covered all of this extensively. I will send you a link. You can hang it up. It's got everything in black and white right in front of you.
Cool.
And it sounds like we're splitting hairs, and I'm just a simple family medicine doc. And I'm like, well, that seems okay. Well, yeah, but if you read what they write and the way they write it, the order is for soldiers, it is a lawful order, which, first of all, when someone says, trust me, don't trust them. Right? When someone says, this is a legal order, everything after that is questionable. They say, this is a legal order. And then they say, it is a legal order to mandate that soldiers take a fully FDA approved, which is a true statement. And then they say, you may volunteer to take these not FDA approved. And now they're punishing you for not taking the unapproved ones. even though you're not required to, you can volunteer. Well, I'm not going to volunteer to do something that I don't want to do anyways, because even if they had it, I wouldn't do it. I would willfully disobey a lawful order at that point. But right now, I'm disobeying an unlawful order, which is actually my duty.
Right, correct. So one of the things that they've done, and we have, Alec, we have so many hidden recording audio clips of this, of doctors blatantly. When I say doctors, I'm talking same thing, just like Sam is here now, a field grade licensed physician in the military. These are majors, lieutenant colonels, and even in one case, a full bird colonel who decided to chime in on the conversation. Not sure why he was at the clinic, but he was. And they are telling soldiers flat out lies to their face about, oh, no, they're the same thing. They're interchangeable. And that's, and they speak really fast and really fancy, like they're going to trump these troops. And here's the funny thing. A lot of these soldiers go in there prepared for this game, and they throw it right back at them like, oh, big physician with his big brain is going to talk down to little old Sergeant so-and-so. No, you're not. Because he knows. He's prepared for this conversation. And some of these audio recordings are, well, they would be hilarious if they weren't so sad and scary to see what's going on within the community. But yeah, the shell game that's taken place, you had said this a second ago, interchangeable. What does that mean? Really quick. We have discussed this. They said in the Pfizer document, or the FDA said about the Pfizer vaccine, the FDA said that they can be used interchangeably. Listen to me. We are not splitting hairs here. There's a difference. Interchangeably is not a legal term. They said they could be used interchangeably because they were contending that they were the same compound, which they're not. And that's a whole different discussion, but we're not going to talk about that right now. They said they can be used interchangeably. That is not the same thing as saying that they are interchangeable. Think about the logic here really quick. And this is codified in law, but you cannot have an EUA drug that is interchangeable with an FDA approved drug. Does that make sense to you? Wouldn't it just be FDA approved at that point? It wouldn't be an EUA anymore. They cannot be interchangeable. Besides the fact that we've gone into all the legalities of biosimilars, being a biosimilar with another drug, and you have to meet certain qualifications to be interchangeable. I don't want to get into all that because that just gets lost in the weeds of saying that they never said that they were interchangeable. They said that they can be used interchangeably. And because of that, an official, I believe it was an 06 within the DHA, the Department of Defense Health Agency, excuse me, came out and said that they're interchangeable. Well, no, they're not interchangeable, but the DOD predicated their entire order off of that statement. And I'm like, wait, so we have an 06 that's running the policy for the entire DOD now? Is that how it works? Isn't there like a Surgeon General at the 3-star level that can make a statement a little more qualifying? Or nope, that's not how they did it. But this entire thing is a shell game and a ruse. And we've even found out at one duty station now, I'll stop after this, one duty station, they found out they were printing out and falsifying Comirnaty labels and sticking them on BioNTech vials. Why do that? If they are interchangeable, you wouldn't. That is fraud in every sense of the word.
Yeah. And one more other word game that they've been playing this entire time that I think is really important if your listeners haven't heard this before. We hear safe and effective, safe and effective, and they're using this word effective. And effective doesn't mean what I think it should mean. And the way I say that is, the reason I say it that way is, they should be using the word efficacious. Efficacious is a different word. It means a different thing. In medicine, effective can mean a couple of different things, but one of the things that it can mean is it's how easy it is to deliver to the patient. And if it's in a needle, in a syringe, it's really effective to deliver it. It's easy to deliver it to the patient. It doesn't cause any pain for the person who's delivering it. It's really easy. You just line them up, treat them up, send them packing. It has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with how it prevents infection. Now, the word efficacious does. And when you have something like a negative efficacious rate, that means that you have a higher risk of getting infected after you've had the shot. It means you would have been better off if you never had the shot than if you had the third one, fourth, fifth, whenever this stops.
Yeah. That's what they do. They do these clever bait and switch and switches and use of clever language for the person who's not attuned to what's going on. They will be tricked by this. And I've actually had unfortunately, several friends who are still in the Army that were skeptical of these products. And then when the quote Pfizer product was approved, they signed up to get it because they thought, oh, well, there's nothing I can do now. There's an FDA approved shot. And it's really sad because how many other soldiers have had that happen to them? How many people in the civilian world have had that happen to them? I would argue millions of people have had that happen to them. And it's really disturbing. So with you were providing medical exemptions as a physician, right? Providing medical exemptions, which is in your right to do if you deem that it is medically, there is a medical situation that arises where someone should not receive this product. And you were doing that as a physician. And then what happened?
Okay. So my medical exemption was based on the fact of these lipid nanoparticles not being safe for human use.
It literally said that. Yeah.
Yeah, it says not validated for medical use, not for human use, not for use in veterinary medicine. So you can't even use it on animals. And part of the warnings on there would say that the manufacturer said on the material safety data sheet that all safety relies on the end user. And what that means is if I buy this from this company and I hurt myself with their product, it's my fault. Not their fault, because that's how dangerous this could be. And so obviously after reading all these different things about it, if a patient doesn't want to get it, I'm beholden to the patient. I'm not beholden to the Army. You know, technically the Army's my employer, but it's kind of a different place. It's almost like a lawyer, right? A lawyer is beholden to their client. A doctor is beholden to the patient. And so legally, medically, and ethically, I have to do all the right things for the patient that are still fall within those guidelines. And helping them find a way, a legitimate way, to not have to have this thing, not be coerced to take this jab that they shouldn't be getting anyways. Well, here it is. Here's a medical exemption that follows the law. The law stated that the family physician or the healthcare clinician, healthcare provider, would be able to determine if a temporary medical exemption was needed or not and would approve it. And so I did that. And I was suspended because I allegedly wasn't following the Secretary of Defense guidance. Well, guidance isn't law. It's not policy. And that was on September 13th. And then on September 14th, the day after I was suspended, is when the Secretary of Defense policy came out. And it mirrored, it was the same policy that was already lawfully in the books, which I followed.
And so what did they try to say that you were doing wrong? Like what was the specific guidance that you were not following?
I got an email from Higher, and a lot of the details of this, I have to be a little hazy and I apologize. But if you go into the Children's Health Defense article that they wrote about me, they took that entire thing from my declaration provided to the court. So please.
Also, we'll share that in the show notes. So for that specific question, we'll share the Children's Health Defense article
Let me go into the areas that I can. So my boss sent me an email saying, we don't know how to, this is before I was suspended. This is like in August. We don't know how we're going to go forward with these medical exemptions. It may need general officer approval, which doesn't follow the law that's already previously stated. So it's like, okay, well, but more to follow. And they later claimed that that was them telling me, do not write them. Did you hear me say, do not write them? Because I didn't hear that. What I heard was, if you write them, you may have to rewrite them. I'm okay with rewriting stuff because I'm about giving people hope.
Yeah.
And not making them be coerced. And I want to make it very clear here, and Danny and I have had this conversation before, and I think we're pretty copacetic on this. A lot of people say forced. I don't think they understand what that word actually means. But there's been lots of coercion. Forced is when they grab you and they pin you down and they hold you and they inject something into your body against your will. And we haven't seen that yet in the United States, and I hope we never do. But we have not been forced. We have been coerced, which is terrible, and it's awful, and it's horrible for someone to threaten your livelihood and threaten to take away the way you feed your family. But that's different than holding you down.
Yeah, you hold me down, and I don't know if this is appropriate for your podcast, Alex.
It's all good.
The Second Amendment.
If you hold me down or you try to stick it in my kids, all the ammo I have saved up is going bang, 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 right out the front door.
Yeah, so, and this gets into and I'm cool with you saying that. this gets into more spiritual philosophical discussion that we don't want to get into, but I'll briefly say many of the things that they are doing actually require our consent. If we just stopped playing their stupid Monopoly game, it would be over. And that's why, like,
airlines.
And that's the thing. And that's what people don't understand with the airlines is you are contracting with them. When you purchase a flight, you are agreeing, you are checking a box, essentially giving your signature that you agree to follow all of their guidelines. In any other situation, you are not under contract with that entity, with that organization, with that individual specifically to receive this product. Like what we have, and I've seen massive success with this, is people holding their, not their employer, but the man or woman, the actual name of the man or woman that is giving them the order to do X, Y, or Z, asking where in their contract of employment it required that they do that, and saying, okay, if I get this product, then you as the man or woman will agree to be liable for any injury associated with it because the manufacturers aren't. And then what we have seen happen, not in all cases, but in many, is that that man or woman who is giving that order backs down, is like, okay, I'm not going to be held liable for this. I'm not going to be held responsible. So the point is, though, just like you're saying here, is there's a huge difference between force and coerce. They are coercing people heavily in the United States. Absolutely. But it still requires my medical license. Yeah.
Well, and when I say airlines, when I say airlines, I don't mean like what we're contracting with. I'm talking about the pilots. The pilots said, we're not going to do this. And guess what? Oh, wow. There's a lot of pilots saying we're not going to do this. Well, we need to back off because we need pilots.
Yeah, exactly.
That's no go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And yeah. What were you going to say, Sam?
So back when I used to counsel patients on this, I said, you can get it if you want to get it, not if you don't. And I would tell them, I'm so strong in my feelings of not getting it, just so they would feel comfortable not getting it, because every other doc I know in the world says get it. Because I tell them, let's put ourselves in this fictitional world, let's say England, where you're employed by the government to be a doctor, and there's no other way you can be a doctor unless you're employed by the government. And let's say you have to have the shot to be employed. I'd rather bust tables.
Mm. For real, though.
And I have a family of four that I'm supporting. I'd rather bust tables.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. I just linked one right there. By the way, Alex, you can share that out if you want or not. Anyways, that's a great example of coercion as well. That actually just came to me. This was a policy letter written by the Department of Defense, by the SecDef. This is signed by the SecDef himself on November 30th, 2021. But basically what he said in this is that in order to participate in drills, training, and other duty conducted under Title 32 U.S. Code, you will be fully vaccinated. And then he says, no Department of Defense funding may be allocated for payment of duties performed under blah, blah, blah. And then no credit or excused absence shall be afforded to members who do not participate in drills. So basically what he said is, I can't make you get the vaccination, but you will not drill. And if you don't drill, you will be AWOL. Because that's what he's saying here. No credit or excused absence shall be afforded. So you can't show up, but you're AWOL if you don't show up. And therefore, what can we do at that point? Well, you're AWOL. We got you. So now we can go after you with punitive whatever and hit you hard. It's not for a vaccine at this point. It's for you being AWOL.
Yeah.
And that's how they're getting around that NDA or any of these bills they're passing in Congress, is those bills specifically say only for COVID. Well, when you don't do the COVID thing, you're technically, you're disobeying what they consider a lawful order. So that's not really about COVID.
Mm.
Yeah, and just what you said. And in my situation, I've had GOMARS now.
Oh man!
Before it's okay,
but and this is the really
explain what a GOMAR is for the people listening who aren't military though.
Yeah, General Memorandum of General Order
Officer.
Help me out here, Danny.
General Officer Memorandum of Reprimand. General, I know it well. Oh yeah,
yeah. I've never had one before. They gave me this opportunity to make sure it wasn't in my permanent record.
Bum bum bum.
You know, in your permanent record. My permanent record's in the sky.
Thank for your life, Major.
With our Lord. And so they can put in my permanent record all day. I don't care.
Yeah.
So now I want to use this last 30 minutes or so to get into the DMED data. if that's cool, if you're cool to go to that direction.
Yes, please. I don't have it up in front of me, but I'm all about it. Actually, this is your lane, Sam. I can't jump in this. All I can do is talk about the nasty side of the
army. If you want to, Sam.
Got to talk about the medical side.
If you're comfortable getting into that.
And so what I don't want to do, and I think we talked about this before, is I don't want to get in specific, pinpoint numbers, and someone, that guy's an idiot. He said, 342 when it was supposed to be 400.
Oh, I can pull up the thing if you give me a second. You guys talk for a second. I'll find the DMED data.
But the point of this entire DMED data is that the major point is, and we'll get into the glitch point of that in just a minute, but the idea is there's an entire system that's set up to be the eyes forward in the military medical system to see what is endangering our troops. Mm-hmm. Because this information is only military troops, service members, and the information is gleaned from the electronic medical record that we use. Mm-hmm. So, people say, VAERS isn't accurate. Well, yeah, you're right. It's not. It only reports about 1%, which means the numbers are significantly worse than what we think. But you can't use that argument with DMED. Mm-hmm. You can't use that.
Okay. Is it
because it's a more active surveillance system? It's got it.
It's designed to look for what's on the horizon. And so I got a phone call from another doctor, a friend of mine. And this was after Christmas, and this is the really important part, is that I put in an unqualified request for resignation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I tried to get out a little bit early, and they denied my request for resignation.
No way. I didn't know this piece. They denied your UQ. Okay, so for the people...
I didn't know this either.
For the people listening, watching, so that's what... So I had to serve a minimum of 5 as an officer after graduating from West Point, and what... The majority of West Pointers end up doing after 5 years is put in a UQR, which is you getting out of the Army after your 5 year required active time. So I don't know exactly what the requirements were for you as a medical officer.
An HBSB. So my complete active duty service obligation will be done in June of 2023.
Okay.
But just before Christmas, I put into my higher off whatever. I'll offer you my resignation.
Yeah.
Especially
because they had already suspended you, right? So you're not even able to do your job that you're supposed to be doing
in the doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing being a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just call it quits. let's get out of here. Just,
No harm, no foul. Restore everything. Let me go. And because I was able to stay in, and this is a God thing, because I was able to stay in, I was around to be available for this phone call from this doctor that said, "Hey, I'm looking into DMED." What's DMED? I never heard of it. Oh, it's this thing. This person was a medical public health person, and they
are, say, they, are they just real quick, are they an officer too, or are they,
yeah, you know,
okay,
Danny certainly does.
got it okay.
And so I get the phone call, and this person was just shocked. I could hear how faint was on the phone.
Yeah.
because this person was just shocked at the numbers that they saw.
Yeah.
And so the numbers, previous years, let's say pulmonary embolism, let's say it'd be somewhere in the 600, less than 700, a little more than 600 for 5 years. And then in less than one entire complete year, it went up to 1,300.
Wow.
Which is everybody's getting pulmonary embolisms.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have all the numbers in front of me. You can feel free to shoot them off if you want, if you need any specific data. But what I want to talk about is PolitiFact and their, I keep pulling up the wrong thing.
Which is great too. Thank you for bringing that up. And so you have this system that you've paid some company millions of dollars to do this job. And now, a couple days, a week or two after these DMED whistleblowers come out and say that something is horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. And then David Horowitz writes an article. And then all of a sudden, PolitiFact has an email interview with someone from the Pentagon. No official statement. There was no banner put on the DMED database. They just took the system down and then put it back up, and everything's different.
All the numbers were lower, right? So essentially what happened?
No, they were lower. The pulmonary embolism, they were higher for all those years, which means doctors would have been going, what in the world is going on here?
No, that's what I meant.
Soldiers,
like,
that's before they fly on planes.
Yeah. What I meant is that they change the numbers thereafter when bring it back up to basically make it look like, oh, there was no issue in the system.
No change.
Although, yeah. Although there was glaring issues.
If you look at the numbers and you see the amount of, you just have to see the new numbers and you'd be like, wait, do we have like the most diseased, crippled, ineffective military force in the world? I thought we had the best, and yet these numbers are off the chart for every year within this. So it begs the question, how far back do these numbers go?
And what was the excuse? Well, and what was the primary excuse, Sam, for why the numbers were the way that they were?
In that Politico thing.
I've got it pulled up.
They said that there was an email interview with someone from the Pentagon. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Danny, but the email interview said that there was a glitch. And for 5 years, they've been looking at everything wrong. And so it begs the question, were you wrong then and lied then for 5 years? Or are you wrong now and you're lying now? Because if you're paying someone like 20 plus millions of dollars to do this and they derelict their job, and we haven't been seeing this incredible disease process that's been going through for 5 years, well, they should probably be fired.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
There's a conspiracy to commit treason.
Numbers related to the vaccine. Tell them about the numbers that weren't related to the vaccine, like typhoid fever or Lyme disease. They stayed the same, right?
Danny, you brought this up on the last episode that some of those had gone down. It was only things that were related with the trend, although the undiscussed and undisclosed trend.
The same VAERS trend, though.
Yes, the same VAERS trend on specifically the COVID vaccine injury. Those were the only things that were spiking in the DMED data, whereas just like you're saying, things like Lyme disease and other things that are unrelated to any of the side effects.
Related.
Yeah. Those things remain constant.
Right.
The really, really, really important part here is either way, if they were wrong for all those years and there was a glitch, then they need to be held accountable. If what I think happened, then there's conspiracy, right? Because conspiracy means two or more people working together to do something. So conspiracy to commit treason.
Yeah.
Because if you're blinding the medical eye of the military troops and now you can't see what the threats are, then the example I've used before is if you're a scout, let's say you're a Pfister and you're up on the ridge and you're looking down, you're staying low so they can't see your silhouette, and you're looking down on this area and you see a 1,000 troops of the enemy there, and you tell your platoon, yeah, it's safe. Go on down there. It's safe. You'll be fine. What would you call that guy?
Oh my God.
That's
you
exactly
call him a traitor.
Happening.
You would say that he committed treason. You would say that he sent his troops to die. I mean, there's a number of things you'd call.
We were talking about
for this conspiracy commit treason.
Yeah.
We were talking about HIV earlier. You want to gander at what those numbers look like? Let me just run through.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I know, Sam, you don't want to touch on specific numbers, but
I can
luckily,
do whatever I want. Throw out the disclaimer. I don't speak on behalf of the U.S. government party. I don't care. Come on, bring it on.
Yeah, throw us those numbers, man. Duty. So what they were in the, like, do you have specifics on? Okay,
I have all the numbers. Cool. So let's start at 2016: 599, 455, 412, 415, 392. That was in 2020. That was
That was for what? That was for
HIV.
Got it.
That was actually a trend that showed it going down. Yep. Remember, it started at 599 every year after that went down
because everyone's isolated and they're not doing the things that you got to do.
Okay. So 2020 was 392. 2021 was 2,460, which was a 541.14% increase.
Add up all those 5 years. Is that more? That one year more than the 5 years before?
It was literally more in 1 year than all 5 years combined.
Wow.
That trend is with most of these processes that we thought would increase. Now there's people that are very smart with math, and I'm not going to claim to be any sort of math wizard because I am not, but they say that the previous, the numbers that the DMED whistleblowers pulled, they didn't look right either, and they may not have been right. There may be some issues with how it was reported because there may be a huge problem. There may actually be a glitch and a problem. But the main thing is there's this change that, and when they publish the new set of data that they, they handed Lieutenant Colonel Long in the courtroom this paper that was just printed, no letterhead, no nothing. They said, well, this is our correction. And if you look at those numbers, they show like a 3% increase in testicular cancer. And that right there is enough to go, whoa.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. Here's an interesting point. And I can't prove this with paperwork at the moment, but I have talked to one of our wonderful friends in the medical community that we've referenced a few times. Anyways, this stuff lines up. So I didn't know this. Apparently, and you probably know this, Sam, but VAERS has a active duty component in it that you can select. Apparently, that's a thing. You can select as the person is active duty, and it goes into special reporting as a caveat that says this person's on active duty and it's reported in VAERS and all this stuff. It just so happens that VAERS data lines up pretty linearly with the DMED data. So this stuff was in correlation. At least two different databases were correlating with each other based on the overall numbers for active duty personnel. I don't know how much more you need to see. Everything points this way, and yet they're going to grab your head, turn it, and say, no, this way, this way, this way. Don't look at that, this way.
Do you have specifics on some of the other numbers, like myocarditis? Okay, yeah. Let's go through those too. I mean, like, I want people to understand.
Okay.
What we're talking about here, just real quick, is data captured by the Department of Defense and their DMED system on a number of these things over a 5-year period at the least, and what the numbers showed, and then a drastic spike in 2021 in a number of categories that specifically line up with the rollout of this product and things that many dissident healthcare workers and experts were sounding the alarm on, even what we covered in that episode of heart-related issues, strokes, blood clots, and all these things that specifically lined up with the harmful effects of this specific product that was given to millions of service members.
Let's just start off with the generic. I guess. Let's say chest pain, unspecified. A 1,529% increase. Okay, so they went from our last year we had reported was, and I do add, I want to add one more thing. The DMED data was only a 10-month gather. It was only gathered over a 10-month period. So it wasn't even a full 12 months for the year of 2021.
So it left out December, November?
Yes.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
So we went from 5,851 incidents of chest pain to 74,813.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. So let me look for some dyspnea. You're going to have to help me out on that one, doctor. Dyspnea.
You're close. You said it right the first time.
Dyspnea. I did that last time too. I said the P is silent. Don't pronounce it. Yeah. I'm a dumb. And I don't contend to be anything like but. So we had a 905% increase in dyspnea. Acute myocarditis was 206. No, I'm sorry, not myocarditis. Acute MI, which is myocardial infarction,
heart attack, colloquially known as heart attack.
Heart attack. Okay,
I'm learning things, getting smart here, getting learned. 269% increase, and that was a number that rose from 64. And no, those are all 2021 does. Anyways, yeah, 269.
Go ahead, Sam. What?
You would expect myocardial infarction to be incredibly low because these are active duty service members only.
Yeah.
Supposed to be in good shape. Acute pericarditis, 175% increase. Acute myocarditis, 285% increase. Pulmonary embolism, that's a good one, 467% increase. Cerebral infarction, 393% increase. Bell's palsy.
Okay, yeah. So cerebral infarction is a stroke. Okay.
Bell's palsy, 319% increase.
Bell's palsy was half your face goes flaccid. Looks like a stroke. It may not be.
I don't know what DIC
is. It's not a stroke,
is.
But it may look like a stroke.
What is DIC?
Disseminated intravascular coagulation, which is interesting because what I have on my screen over here, can I share it real quick?
Yeah, share screen.
Give me a second. So if you... Let me pull this forward. Okay. So you see here, It says lipid nanoparticles may induce innate immune response. There may be a dose-limiting toxicity, such as acute phase response and complement-activated pseudoallergy. In some, this is quoting straight from a patent. In some embodiments, the LNP-related toxicities comprises coagulopathy, disseminated intravascular coagulation, vascular thrombosis, blah, 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 keeps going.
Okay, so I want to find the other years, but that number went up by 1,175%.
Wow. Wow. I mean,
that one was a big one. That was off the chart. I don't know what Guillain-Barré syndrome is.
Guillain-Barré syndrome is like a paralysis.
It's a progressive paralysis from the ground up. It's autoimmune, so your antibodies attack your nerve cells and get rid of the myelin sheath or the insulation on the cable. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it before, and you can actually die from it very easily.
Yeah,
because first you can't move your toes, then you can't move your legs, and then you can't breathe.
Yeah,
250%
increase in the military amongst active duty.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We saw immunodeficiencies, which is at the heart of everything we're talking about. 275% increase. Menstrual irregularity. We talked about that. A lot of women came out right off the bat talking about how their periods were all over the place, or they weren't coming in at all, or all sorts of reproductive issues, and 476% increase menstrual irregularity. I mean, and you talk to, look, I'm married to a woman, happen to know something or something about a woman just from what they tell me. And periods for most women are fairly on point regular. Like there's something off if they're not landing on time. I know not every woman that applies to, but that's a huge number for something like that. I don't know.
It's the canary in the coal mine. And that's what's so good about this is the woman's cycle is so delicate that a change in exercise, a change in stress, a change in eating habits can change that. And so now that we're seeing all these changes, well, then there's something that's going inside of the body that's different. And it could be a hormonal issue. It could be a clotting bleeding disorder, as we just saw. It could be all these things, but it's kind of like a canary. And you know, when that canary died, the guys do, hey, let's get out of here. So when cycles start changing and we hear reports of this all over and we hear of like residual clots from the uterus, that means the entire uterus clotted and they passed.
Is that also known as a decidual cast?
Cast, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a cast a cast is, you know, when you make a cast mold. And so it looks like the inside of the uterus, but it's a giant clot. And we've never seen those before, or at least never in any wide scale ever. And now we're seeing them pretty often. It's like something should make everyone go, let's take a knee. Let's stop doing what we've changed for the past year.
Yeah. And that brings me back to the point that I made, and I'll do this as a last question, because I know we've been going for quite some time. And Danny, if you have anything to send or anything related to that DMED data, so we could also post that for people to look at. I want to be clear real quick too.
Oh, yeah,
all three of us know someone, I'm gonna say this very loosely, that works, let's just say, in public health for the Department of Defense. I want to be very, very generic with this. And they know for certain that what happened with the DMED data was not a glitch whatsoever. They were actively looking at the DMED data and saw that it was altered thereafter, and it had nothing whatsoever to do with the glitch. That these signals that are alarming that Danny was discussing here are real, and that they were happening because of something that is new, that is presented to the environment, that a lot of people are receiving. And so that goes back to, I guess, my last point. As a physician, especially one that's in the Army and that is looking out for the force, in your professional opinion, are you frustrated at the lack of intellectual curiosity surrounding these alarming figures that you, especially someone who has already brought up concerns with the ingredients that are in this product, is that frustrating for you? And what is your message to anyone listening to this that either knows service members or is a service member themselves? What is your message to them?
It's keep holding the line, because they're gonna try and coerce you. You know, many are gonna say force, but we already talked about it. It's it's coercion. And if they hold you down and do that, then, you know, use whatever equal opposite force you need to. But it's coercion. And so don't ever do anything you don't want to do. Don't give in. Never surrender. Never give up. If you're not plugged in with a group of people that are of like mind, then do that, because it's easy to be picked off if you're alone. You know, I've never been in combat, but many of y'all have. I think maybe both of y'all have. And you never want to be alone anywhere. I have
not, just for the record.
You still never want to be alone anywhere when you're in a foreign land and you're the enemy. And same thing here. We are in a foreign land and we are the enemy.
Yeah, and I said this on a...
Go ahead.
No, keep going.
And I'm not saying who the enemy is, because I'm not ready to say that, because I don't know who the enemy is. But when we keep pushing something that's destructive to our force, and there's all these red flags and all these things, and everyone's screaming, we need to stop, we need to stop, we need to stop, and the hemorrhaging keeps continuing, who's ever pushing that hemorrhage may be the one who's the enemy.
Yeah, and I said this in a previous podcast, Alec. A lot of what Sam just said, I echo, and I said, listen, what do we do? What do we do with tactics and strategy in the military? We divide and conquer our enemy. We never strike the enemy at their strongest point. We look for their weakest point and exploit it. A divided force, an isolated force, is weaker. We mass on that and we attack. That is what they're doing here. They have segregated people, they've isolated them, and they've made them feel alone and cut off. And one of the most disastrous things that I have in that DMED data that you can put out, and I want everybody to look at, is the amount of suicides that went up in 2021. It skyrocketed because you took a creature that is designed for cohabitation and networking and connecting to other creatures of the same type, and you isolated them and you quarantined them and you cut them off from life. And so what I say to people, just like he did, hold the line. You are not alone. I promise. There's a lot of people on this planet, and there's a lot of people here in your very neighborhood and in your backyard and in on your duty station, wherever you're at, who are right there with you. Hold the line. Don't give up, because they want you to feel isolated and alone. Don't let them. You're not alone.
And there's these people out there that say, oh, purebred. And we've talked before about this. Or pure blood. They call themselves pure blood, and they don't want to associate with people who aren't. That is one of the most destructive things that we could do.
Amen.
And we need to bring in everybody who's thinking the same way, whether they were tricked into getting this or they wanted to get it, because we can't do it alone. Everyone has to stand up and say, no, no more. This will go no further.
Boom.
We all need to make courage more contagious than fear.
Amen to that. And this is a line that one of my best friends, Dr. Ben Tapper, often says: our convictions have to be greater than our complacency on this. And when they're picking you off and making you feel like you're alone, it becomes much more difficult to be courageous. But as you found out, Sam, as you've probably found out, Danny, as I found out, even when I was in, when I began speaking on this, when I found the courage within me to speak and to share my honest assessment of what was going on, always from a position of love and compassion, but being brutally honest for what I saw was going on, all the fears that I had, some were still there, but many of them dissolved. And I found a community of people who also felt alone, and we started connecting, we started networking, and now we're expanding and growing rapidly. I mean, I started an entire organization and we're expanding and growing rapidly, and that's allowed me to connect with people like you. And that's what happens when you're willing to have the courage to speak up. And they're making you feel like you're alone, but you're absolutely not. And that applies to service members as well. I remember, Danny, you shared this last time, and I urge you again to go listen to that podcast episode too. The actual number, or supposed number, of service members who have received these products is much lower, I think, than they are actually sharing. So you are absolutely not alone on this. And there's resources and people available to connect with. And that's, we actually have chapters with our organization. So we'll go ahead and wrap up there. Sam, thank you for joining us. Danny, thank you for jumping in. I always appreciate your perspective on everything too, man.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, Sam, thank you for doing everything that you're doing, brother. Say that again.
No, thank you. We should do this again. I like this. This is fun.
Yes, this is good. Really? This is awesome. And I appreciate the free-flowing discussion. Thank you both so much for coming on.